This is Roots Pod.
Oh, Boney now carrying it the other way. Gives it away. Graciano. This is what you can't have happen if you're San Antonio getting caught in transition. Cherie. Trayvon Reed looking through. Graciano on the turn. Graciano just wide.
Welcome into Roots Pod. San Antonio FC 1, Oakland Roots 0. I'm Aaron here with John and Peter. We're going to talk through it, you know, see if we can reach some resolution there. And then probably by the end of this episode, we'll have convinced ourselves that the Roots are about to go on the road to Hartford Athletic and bounce back, I imagine.
At least they'll go on the road to Hartford Athletic.
Well, they will at least be there, probably. So really just two events worth noting from this match against San Antonio. Fourth minute of the game, Lucho Solignac puts in a goal off a rebound. After Roots get just torn all to pieces in their defensive shape, it was, I mean, look, 4 minutes in, whatever, you're still warming up, but that was not great. And then Camden Riley picks up two yellows in first half stoppage time. The second for we're not really sure what, but, you know, obviously continuing in the tradition of defensive midfielders of teams Peter likes getting bizarre second yellows in the first half. So that was pretty much it. The cake was baked at that point. The Roots put in a gameful, manful performance, but San Antonio did well to protect their lead.
So I wasn't at the TV yet when the first goal went in, which is never a great sign. But watching it back on replay, I mean, like, yeah, the Roots defense doesn't do what it's supposed to do. I can't fix that or sugarcoat it. But, you know, Lucho Solignac was an MLS-level player, and Jorge Hernandez is in his last stretch of games in the USL before he goes to MLS, right? So it's like those two guys both pulled off a great move, and Paul almost stopped it. You know, he almost prevented that. You know, still not great. It's not wonderful. But, like, that was just this, like, little flash of San Antonio being the playoff team that they should have been.
Yeah, I think my concern, the reason I say that they got pulled apart is that, right, that first pass goes in, and this is a guy who's open in the midfield because Danny Gomez is tracked a runner to the back, which means that Logue has to step up. And he's late in doing so, which makes sense because he's now stepping out of the back line. And the second pass, which is what really makes the move work, is to the guy Danny Gomez just followed into the back line. Like, you have disrupted the defensive shape to cover that guy. He shouldn't be receiving the ball in a position to do something dangerous with it. I don't know. They only gave up one goal. I thought there were a couple other times in this match when it looked like the back line was all out of sorts, especially on counterattacking opportunities. It's shocking, I think, given, and John, maybe you weigh in here as well because you were right there on the sidelines, right? This is a team that's been so defensively solid for so long to see. I mean, I don't know what the plan was, but I do know that it didn't look right and that guys were yelling and pointing at each other after a lot of sequences. It was just shocking. I mean, what could you pick up down there on the field?
Yeah, what I picked up on the field is I think there, and I wrote about this in my talking points after the match, just based on, you know, my conversation with Gavin, was there seems to be a disconnect in the style. I think even the first goal you can kind of chalk up to this team kind of in between styles, it seems. And, you know, it's really not what Gavin wants. You know, they're playing kind of in the back before that goal happens, and San Antonio retains possession, gets possession in the great area, and then leads to the goal. And you can see throughout the game, you know, I was peeking over to Gavin time and time again, really almost every like 5 minutes, I was really just staring over at Gavin. You could see him just always pointing downfield, saying, pass the ball long, just send it long. And through these last two games, I mean, you've seen just a lot of indecision from those passers to send the ball over the top. And I think there is a disconnect with what Gavin is asking them to do and what they're executing on the field, because he said it outright after the game. He wants them to play direct, you know, exactly what we're talking about here on the last podcast and this podcast. And I don't know, it just looks like there is, like, I'm sitting there. I always sit behind the away goal, so I can really see. I mean, the first people I see are the forwards. I'm seeing, you know, in this game, Dwyer, Sinisterra, and Nye, and they're all making runs forward, and no one's sending a ball over the top. I think maybe why they're not sending is they don't see the clear pass, maybe second guessing it, not pulling the trigger. And Gavin's just saying, pull the damn trigger anyways, just see what happens. You know, it kind of makes me reflect on one thing I said in the last podcast is just send the ball long. I'd rather have, you know, a 0-0 draw than give up a bunch of fucking goals. Just send the ball long into their side. And that really seems to be what Gavin wants, but it is not happening these last two games.
You know, I think that there's a great reason to do that, to just hoof the ball, is that Gomez is, I mean, I think for my money, Gomez's biggest strength is forcing turnovers. But he can't do that if he has the ball. So all that happens when he has the ball is sort of tepid passes sideways and backwards. And likewise, I mean, I think that Riley creates a little more, but Riley's biggest strength is also forcing those turnovers and then creating breakaways. And so it's like it's like you're wasting your midfield if you're trying to build up patiently through them.
I mean, we definitely don't have a midfield that is built for that, right? There's no playmaker. There's no ball playing midfielder. We had tried Cedeño there, but he's gone. We tried Mefeca there, but he hasn't played since Rhode Island. And there's no one. This team is not built for that, right? Without a Charlie Dennis, without a Jose Hernandez, playing through the middle like that is sort of pointless. And so we keep talking about it. Sit back and just send it long. I don't understand why they don't do it. But speaking of the attack, it was clear in the first half, which is really the only time we can really talk about the attack, right? They are very committed to playing through Sinisterra. And I mean, that looks like it might be profitable, but he needs someone in the middle of the pitch, right? The Roots had a lot of success going down the right with Diaz and Sinisterra, but almost no touches in the middle of the pitch in the first half. And it's just going to be difficult to score goals if you can't get the ball in front of goal.
Well, I mean, hopefully that's what Baca can do, right? Is that he can massively improve our ability to hold the ball in the middle of the pitch and make sensible decisions and execute distributing the ball. It is concerning that the Roots didn't seem to think they needed to go out and get a player like Baca. He just fell into their lap. But he's here. He was on the bench. He's clearly cleared to play. So hopefully that, you know, that maybe
already a Roots legend, even getting
a yellow
card. Barely here, and he's got a yellow card.
Yeah. On the topic of yellow cards, if I can move us on to the other,
please go ahead. Aspect of this, I'm sure you have many things to say.
I've watched the highlight 2 or 3 dozen times, and I just don't see him do anything wrong. And my understanding from people who were in the stands is that all of them thought he kicked out, that he did the thing that earned the yellow card. Even if he did, the guy knocks him over. It's like a yellow card foul to begin with. And then while he's on the ground, the guy steps over him. And I think a little kick out is probably reasonable self-defense in that situation. You know, he didn't go for the guy's junk. He didn't try to break his ankle. I don't know. It's if he kicks out, it probably has to be a yellow card. And especially when you've just pissed off the referee with, like, a different yellow card. You know, I mean, he's not in the referee's good graces at that moment, and he does something kind of, you know, or he allegedly does something kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's frustrating. Yeah. I mean, it ruins the game. You know, it like has no competitive impact on the game. What he does wrong has no competitive impact on the game, and yet decides the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I wish. No, I mean, the fact that it happened like what within a minute 30 of each other. I mean, I guess I could see it coming in that regard. Like, how many times have you been watching a game and you see someone get successive yellow cards, you know, when they are in a, let's say, I don't know, bad state of mind, aggressive state of mind. So when that happened, I guess I wasn't too surprised, and, you know, see him retaliate on the ground. I mean, it's a tale as old as time in sports, right? The person who retaliates gets the penalty. I mean, in every sport. Like with the referee, is a peculiar decision because, yeah, it changes the game. He has to make that decision to, like, look, I'm going to change the game right now. And you wish he had that same mentality when Trayvon Reed got bowled over late in the game. You know, moments earlier, Trayvon, he dives in the box, gets a yellow. So you can tell how that may have influenced the referee's decision not to award him a penalty just moments later. But, you know, I'm talking to my friend Alexis on the sideline. She used to play, and, you know, she had a great point. It's like when you're a referee, it's like you have to have, you know, a clean slate, almost a clean state of mind. You have to judge every different play as a different play, you know, regardless of what just happened. You know, I, like you said, I replayed that moment a bunch of times before coming onto the podcast, and, you know, my angle during the game, it wasn't that great. There were, you know, a lot of bodies in front of me, but it looked like a foul. Played it again on the TV. It definitely looked like a foul, but I don't know, for Malfa, it didn't seem like it was a foul for the announcers. So I don't know. I guess it's a judgment call every time, but the referee did. I mean, it was weird. And how many times are we going to say that as soccer fans, but even more so than that, USL championship fans, the quality of referees are what we're going to get. You know, we're not shopping at Whole Foods here. But he really changed the game, and it was visible to see. You wish that he would have had that same mentality with Trayvon Reed getting bowled over. You know, you changed the game in the first half. Do it again. Come on now. Be consistent. Yeah.
I think that reminds me of what I think were my two biggest problems. Really, one of them is exactly what you're saying. He clearly didn't give the penalty for Trayvon because Trayvon had dove the other time. And, like, you can say, I mean, I feel like Trayvon shouldn't have gone to ground the first time because he had the ball in the box. Don't throw that away for the hope of a penalty. But the other thing that felt wrong about the Riley second yellow is it felt to me like the referee only decided to do it after the San Antonio players got in his face. And that shit drives me crazy.
Yeah. That's fair. Well, in the realm of things we can, I mean, let's just talk about the first half, because that's when the Roots were playing, you know, 11-on-11, and you could sort of see what they were looking for. It's still not enough chances. You know, they didn't really ever look like scoring a goal outside this one penalty shout. And, I mean, do you guys think that we might ever see Johnny Rodriguez and Dom Dwyer on the pitch at the same time? At the moment, they're sort of trading off. But what about Johnny up top and Dom a little bit behind him in kind of a 10 role? Do you think we might see? I'm just kind of trying to brainstorm ways in which this offense could generate enough chances, because right now it feels like that's really the defense hasn't looked great, but we're asking so much of it right now, and it would be helpful if we could relieve some of that burden going forward.
Well, they did against New Mexico in the second half, at least. Dom, Johnny, and Sherry were on the field all at the same time.
And they scored.
Yeah, and they scored. You can see what happens when you just put all the strikers out there. Put all the strikers out there. But yeah, you know, first half only generated, I got here, 5 shots, 1 on target. The second half was actually much better. I mean, down a man. I thought the second half roots, I mean, yeah, it's because San Antonio was turtling, but Roots controlled the pace. They had 8 shots, but only 1 was on target. It's a testament to finishing again. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I know Johnny was on the bench to start this one. I for me, that's a one-off decision. I think there was some, you know, some of the North Carolina 5-0 loss had some impact on the roster decisions, lineup decisions for this last game. But, you know, I think Johnny is our best striker. He gives our best chance at goals. And, you know, I'll say it again. I like Dwyer as a sub. You know, I like that he can conserve his energy all until those last 30, 20 minutes and give it his all rather than conserving himself and trying to, you know, spare his energy for, you know, 60, 70 minutes.
I think if I were setting up this team, I would do what you're suggesting, Aaron, which is have Dwyer in like a 10 role. Even if I was going to stick with Glinton's formation, I think I would be benching Jai and putting Rodriguez out wide. And I know that that's maybe not where he's always the most productive, but I don't know. I just like, I think that he is our most consistent forward, even if maybe not the one with the highest ceiling. And partially, I just struggle to see what it is that Jai is bringing to this attack right now. You know, he isn't naturally a forward. He doesn't appear to be sort of getting the job done as a wing back defensively. And he just seems to be, I don't know. God.
Well, there's like an absence of chemistry on that side between him and Rasmussen.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Jai's heat map after these games, I mean, it is all over the place. There is no rhyme or reason to where he's picking up the ball. You look at Rasmussen, you're like, you were asked to do a particular thing and you've done that thing. And Jai is just all over the place. And I think it's killing everything going down that side. You know, in addition to the fact that he doesn't have like demonstrable end product.
Yeah. I really think that we would be so much better off cutting a center back and using Rasmussen as a fullback, using Diaz as a fullback, and then running 4 forwards and or 3 midfielders and 3 forwards.
What you've identified mostly though, right, is the fact that, and we've sort of danced around this, the issue, as much as we're talking about an attack that is having trouble getting the ball to the dangerous areas of the pitch and a defense that is getting pulled apart, is that we don't really know what we're doing with the midfield here. Midfield is offering basically nothing in attack. It's great in defense. Danny Gomez and Camden Riley are excellent, you know, at counter-pressing, in getting back and filling gaps in the back line. They're great at that, but there's no cohesion going forward. I mean, is Baca the answer? I mean, he has to be the answer, but is he the answer?
Well, he is an answer. I mean, I don't know. Despite overall having a pretty good record, having some great results, this team's got to figure something out. I mean, I feel like it's hard to call it a crisis when we're currently in one of our best standings, you know, notwithstanding that we fall into sixth, but like, it just, this team looks like they're so beatable. You know, it's not that they can't win. It's that they're very beatable. And if a team shows up with a great plan to beat them, or one refereeing decision goes wrong, it's done. Game over.
Yeah, you know, I think that the midfield options, the personnel that they have, is a testament to the style of play that Gavin wants here. I mean, look at all of them. They're all defensive-minded. Baca, Riley, Gomez. Even the midfield, even the center backs move up into the midfield to provide that counter-pressing midfield pivot. And like, they're not players who are going to the glide with the ball in possession and play a possessive game like these last two games have gone for some reason. They're players who are going to bomb the ball over the top and find the open spaces on a long ball. One of Riley's best plays, I'm forgetting what game it was he was in the midfield and sent a long pass out to, I think it was like Trayvon Reed on the left side. I wish I can remember what game it was, but what I thought when that happened was like, oh my God, that's what we got him for. You know, and I look at Baca's stats and his conversion rate on long passes, and it's like, that's what they're getting him for, you know, to send these long balls from the defensive half to the opposite side of the field to any open space that they can find. You know, you have Reed, a speedster, run down the ball. Johnny has got some pace. He can run down the ball. Sinisterra clearly has a lot of talent with his feet. You know, get him the ball in open space. So when I see these midfielders, you know, and all the qualities that they have, it's like, that's what we're trying to do. So why aren't they doing it?
Yeah, it seems like there is a reliable play that the Roots could be running, which is boot it, let Reed and Sinisterra chase it down to the corners and play a ball into Johnny one-on-one with everyone running the wrong direction except him. You know, that's like, he finishes pretty well. He finishes especially well when he doesn't have time to stop and think about it. And this just seems doable. You know, it seems doable, and I feel Gavin's frustration on it. That's like sort of the main thing that Reed is good at, is just beating people in open space. Anyway, to return to a point that Aaron made, Sinisterra just looks like he is on a completely different level, not just than anyone else on the Roots, but most people that the Roots play against in terms of his like close ball control. You know, he just like he looks like a guy playing in Europe sometimes with the way he like flicks the ball to himself and runs around people. And God, I hope it comes off, or that the team finds a way to use it next season better or something, because he seems like he may be a really exciting player to watch.
Oh, I am all aboard the Sinisterra train. Like, he is something that this attack has been missing, but they just need to give him an outlet, because I think San Antonio too easily was able to pin him up against the touchline. And that was the end of a lot of things that looked promising. And if the Roots can just solve that, figure out how to get him off the touchline, give him someone to move the ball into the center with, we're in good shape. You know, the defense is so good, they just need to score one or two goals a game. You know, in the playoffs, just one and get to a penalty shootout. Like, we're not asking for a whole lot, and they're like this close. You know, they're right there on the cusp.
No, I'm glad you brought up Sinisterra. I mean, he's looked great in the brief time that we've got to see him. You know, I'm glad he got the start here in against San Antonio. I hope he continues to start. I mean, like you said, he has such an innate ability to just know what he's gonna do with the ball before it even gets to him. Just these little flicks with his feet, you know, just flicking at the ball. You know, he was fun to watch. I had the replay on earlier before coming on, and he made a couple runs in possession, long runs in possession. I remember one in the first half where it was like a 30-yard run, and it's like, you know, this guy is awesome. You know, he could be lightning in a bottle. So hopefully it is that. Hopefully, you know, we keep seeing him. I mean, he looks like a surefire starter right away. He looks like he could be a game changer on that right side. We've also been told he could play on the left and in centrally in the 10 role. So maybe we do see him in this multifaceted role where he's moving around the field. But I mean, yeah, get him the ball. Let's see what he can do, because I mean, this offense, this attack needs playmakers, right? I mean, we're not sure where we're getting it from. You know, Reed is so up and down, you know, it's hard to predict what we're going to get. I mean, Reed had a good game. Reed was really taking over San Antonio's defense in the second half there. But the question is, can you do it 2 games in a row? Can you do it 3 games in a row? I mean, there was a time earlier in the season, especially away at Sacramento and going into that match, where I thought Reed was our most dangerous player on offense. He drew that penalty against Sacramento where it was exactly what he wants to do. He wants to get one-on-one, isolated against people and use his speed and try and cut back to the inside. But it's so here and there, you know, he has to show that he can do it multiple games in a row. Nye as well. These guys are in their prime years of their career where they need to be producing now or the page is going to turn. So we got to see more out of them. But Sinisterra, great. Get him the ball.
Well, the good news for the Oakland Roots is that now with the need to get right, they come upon a task which they have conquered successfully many times in the recent past. A trip to the East Coast to play a team who is on the playoff cut line. This time it's Hartford Athletic, who, you know, we should probably discuss whether we think the East is just generally better this year than the West, because Hartford Athletic's its 10th. They have 34 points. That would put them 7th in the West. You know, this is actually a team with some names, you know, some names that were on some successful Western Conference teams the past few years, Mishi Angelina, a Joe Farrell. And they are outside the playoff picture right now because they don't win on the road. And very unfortunately, they will not be playing on the road. Instead, it's the Oakland Roots, who have had some trouble with these East Coast road trips recently, and they'll have to figure out something here. It's almost not even worth talking about Hartford Athletic, because the real question is, are the Roots going to get out of their own way here? Are they going to show up in the Eastern time zone? Because I feel like if they do, there's at least one, and not, if not 3 points in this game. And if they show up like they did last time, obviously there is not. John, you have spent a lot more time, you know, very close to this team than Peter or I have. I mean, do you have any insight about what the Roots are doing on these cross-country trips, and if there's any thought of changing up the routine this time around?
Man, I don't know, but you said Hartford doesn't win on the road. Well, they did against us. They beat us. What was the score here? 2-1 back in April. So we got that going for us. I don't know, man. I'm not buying Roots being just so terrible with these road trips as much as I am buying that they just struggle against this lower competition. You know, they travel out on these trips on a Thursday. They have time to recuperate and get their mind right and body right for these games. Travel distance should not be an excuse for these guys. They're paid athletes. That's the job. You know, you have time. They're being flown out, staying in a nice hotel. It shouldn't be an excuse, and I'm sure the coaching staff knows that too.
Do we assume that they're staying in a nice hotel?
Oh, we probably
are. Yeah, are. I've seen their pictures. Follow them on Instagram.
For anybody who thought they were losing their minds, Oakland lost to Hartford in April of 2023, not 2024.
The hint that John had that wrong is that the Roots goal was scored by Darius Fermella.
Anyway, continue, John.
Still, point being, they can't. Why is it that they struggle against lower competition? So this game really has to be like San Antonio. It has to be a prove it match for them. I'm sure that they're, I mean, they have to be coming into this with a mentality, you know, a chip on their shoulder, so to speak, that they have something to prove. You know, if you're in this playoff race, if you're going to compete, you got to take care of these games. You know, a few podcasts ago, we were going into this like, oh, we got 3 winnable games, 9 points would really take us a long way. Well, you have a chance to get 3. So at least do that. But whether they change anything in the operation, I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're going to travel out earlier. I don't think that'll do much. Then you have to figure out where you're going to practice. But the road struggles are what they are. The road struggles, you know, and the struggles with lower competition is what it is. It's challenges for them to answer. So, I mean, we can't get too scientific in it. It's either you win or you lose or you tie. I mean, they gotta play better. They gotta play better.
That's my kind of science right there. Either you win, lose, or tie. That's.
Oh, I mean, I think that they cannot go to Hartford and try to dominate the game. And, you know, I think that Gavin picked the wrong team in North Carolina, but I don't think he wanted really to try to dominate the game. And I still think that they just kind of failed to execute that, you know, and then they got down early and then they had to chase, and then you have to try things. And I get that. But if he can't get his preferred 11 to go out on the road and play solid defense and try to hit on the break, then he needs to bench the guys who won't do it. I don't know. I mean, I think Hartford is winnable. I think Hartford should be better than their record. And unfortunately, that's exactly the shit that happened with San Antonio. And they showed up and they played a decent game and beat us. Hartford have 2 guys on their roster who've combined for 3 goals this season, who scored 24 goals between them last season. Like, those guys could go off at any second. And then, you know, they have, like Aaron mentioned, Mishi and Galina. They have this guy named Mamadou Dieng. Just came out of nowhere. They signed him from the Sahel Academy in Senegal, and he has 9 goals on the season, but 7 of them are in the last 8 games. He's 20. You know, this guy is very much like a Nick Markanic. Watch him now, because next season he'll be playing on Apple TV Plus.
If I am shouting out like any schematical changes, like you know, Peter just said there, don't try to dominate the game. Maybe not give up goals in the first 10 minutes. That would be a positive. After giving up 1 in the fourth, 2 in the first 10 minutes against North Carolina. So they're on a hell of a streak right now. One thing to change.
Yeah. I don't know. Just don't fuck it up, guys. That's my advice to the team.
That's about as good as we're going to do here. We've got, we're calling the sum total of all possible outcomes science. So when it comes to soccer itself, don't fuck it up. That's what we have. Well, we'll all be around to commiserate at Plank, I think, this weekend in Oakland. And this is an early one, right? So I guess we can pregame the Cal game or something while we're watching the Roots. Who does Cal play this weekend, John?
Florida State.
Florida State.
That is right. Yes.
I am
Tallahassee, baby.
I am backing my way into being a Cal fan because they keep playing teams I utterly freaking loathe.
Yeah.
Aaron, you'll be happy to know that the Cal-Syracuse rivalry is going to kick off this
year.
Oh,
already on my calendar. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah?
Don't worry. I'll be there. November 16th, I believe. Yeah, I'll be there. But this weekend, it'll be a Plank to watch the Oakland Roots. For the love of God, not giving up a goal in the first 10 minutes, playing a nice, solid, defensive low block, hitting Hartford on the break, and coming back to the West Coast with all 3 points. That's what we're doing this weekend. And until then, up the Roots.